Okay, we're beginning here from the bottom of Kuf Aleph Amud Bet, three lines from the bottom. Tanan Hotam, we have a Mishnah in Ohalot. Omotzei Meit Mushkav Kedarko. Person who finds a mate that is buried in a proper manner, lying down, things that you would expect when a person is buried in such a fashion. Notlo Ve'et Tfusato. Then you pick him up, and Tfusato, over here the Rashbam explains that Tfusato, based on the Gemara Nazir, is Notel Afar Tichoach. You take all the soft earth that's around it. Bechofer Shlosha Tfachim Bakarka Betula. And then you go three Tfachim into the virgin earth that's there. Notel Akol. And you take it all with him. Dechashivi Kerekev Shomet. Because they're considered to be the decomposition of the mate. We assume that not only is the mate there, but the mate decomposed, and therefore that which surrounds the mate also belongs to the mate. So over here, where you found the mate in a position that's indicative of burial, again, the Gemara in Nazir discusses what are the alternatives, or how would you find him if he wasn't buried, kid darko, which means that if he's sitting up, if he is lying on his face, if he's got his head between his legs, I mean that different ways that they would bury that are not indicative of a burial or a way the person's normally buried, and as well as the fact that he's lying down, and that he wasn't put there because of sudden circumstances, he wasn't killed there, rather that he passed away and that he was buried in a normal fashion. So if that's the case that you find a mate in such a position, you take the mate and you take all that surrounds the mate with him in order to rebury him somewhere else. The reason that he's doing this is because he wants to clear out the area, he wants to make it either that he can utilize the area or he wants it to be tahor for taharot, that he wants to work with taharot over there. And he doesn't want the mate to be there. Since this mate is just an individual mate, he has a right to move him. Shnayim, again, he finds two bodies similar fashion in a similar way. Notlan vet fusatan. Then you can take them and the earth or decomposition that is around them, that you can take away. Matzah shlosha, if he finds three, im yesh b'neim me'arba ad shmoneh. If he has from 4 until 8 amot, I mean they're spread across a spread of 4 to 8 amot, harizo shchunat kivarot. Then that already is a cemetery. That means that there's more than just a haphazard mate that is buried over here. We're dealing with something that it seems to be an intentional burying of individuals here that comprise a burial area or a cemetery. Then you have to be bodeg mimenu lahalan esrim amah. You have to check from there forward 20 amot. Matzah echad b'sof esrim amah. He finds another person buried at the end of the 20 amot that he checks. Bodeg mimenu lahalan kafamah. And you have to check from him another 20 amot past that next mate that you find. Shiraglayim lidavar. Because you have circumstantial evidence over here that there is a Beit HaKvarot, there is a cemetery or a burial cave that is found here. She'ilo mitchila mitzo, had you found this mate, that single body, from the start, not lo ve'et fusato, you would have been able to remove it and the decomposition around it. So had you come from the other side and bumped into this one mate, you already would have removed it. Problem is that you bumped into the three on the other side first, and that now gives you circumstantial evidence of the fact that there is a Beit HaKvarot here, or a Me'arat HaKivarot over here. And therefore, when you find this other single mate by itself, we don't assume it's just floating there. We assume it has some relationship to the other three mateim that are found 20 amot away. And so the circumstantial evidence makes it now that when you find this other mate, we assume he's part of a Beit HaKvarot or a Me'arat HaKivarot. And that's what compels us now to check an additional 20 amot from that individual. Unlike the situation in which we had found that individual first, we would have just removed him with his tfusa. Now that we found him in the context of the fact that there is a shchunat or a beit hakvarot over here, he takes on significance in of himself, and therefore you have to check an additional 20 amot from him, not just from the original three that we found. All right, so here you have a Mishnah. The Gemara in a second will deal with different aspects of the Mishnah. The main issue that the Gemara wants to understand is, why are you checking 20 amot? Where does this number of 20 amot come from? What is the suspicion? And it's based on what we saw yesterday about the structures of the me'arot and the chatzerot of these burial caves. What are the lengths and widths of the burial caves and the chatzer? And then how much does that obligate you, or what's the distance that obligates you to check based on that? So that's generically what the Mishnah is doing over here. In more particular nature, first of all, you have the Rashbam explaining this part of the Mishnah in the beginning, and he mentions over here, about imha veharog shematzo meguyad, if you find someone who was executed, because you find something removed from his body, cut off of his body, he was killed, it looks like it wasn't just the person was buried there, they were buried there because that's where they were killed. Lo kanami kamo klal. That person does not acquire their area at all. Afilo litfusa, even for the decomposition around it. Diglemeimar sham neharag v'nafal. That's where he was killed, and that's where he ended up just laying down or died over there. V'chein im lo mushkav kidarko. Similarly, if he's not laid down in the normal process of a burial, ika l'svukei b'akum. Then you have a problem. Maybe it's not a Jewish burial, but a non-Jewish burial. V'ein lo tfusa. And therefore you don't have tfusa. So what he is explaining is that the Mishnah indicates that he was mushkav kigarko no lovet tfusato. So the mushkav and kidarko, those two different things are what grant the right of taking up the decomposition. The mate acquires the space around her. You have to take the decomposition when it is mushkav kidarko. That comes to exclude a situation in which they're not kidarko or they're not mushkav. They're in positions, they're indicative of a non-Jewish burial. Then you can remove the mate, but you don't have to take the tfusa. The same thing with someone who looks like they were murdered or killed in that location because of the missing parts or the injury to the body. And therefore it's indicative not of a regular burial, but the possibility of a burial that was either haphazard, happened because he just passed away over there, or they just buried him quickly because they were in the middle of circumstances of war. In those cases, then you can take out the body without taking out the tfusa, as well as begami meyushlosha inlem din shkunat kvarot. And if you have three of them together, they're not considered to be a shkunat kvarot, either if they're non-Jews or if they are Jews who were not buried there intentionally to create a cemetery or a burial cave, simply that's where they landed or ended up. That does not give them the status of a shkunat kvarot, and therefore you can remove the bodies in that instance. Now, he says over here, based on the Gemara in Nizir, Hamotzei, somebody who finds, Prat Limatsui, that comes to exclude a case where it's already known, or something that's already been found, Klomar, Prat Liyadua, something that was already well known or established, Shemechad Mehem Yadua, Shnaim Tchila, if one of them was known from before, and two of them you're finding for the first time, then that's not considered to be Beit HaKvarot, because you need to find three in order for it to be classified as a Beit HaKvarot. Although the Balei Tosafot say that it really, Prat Ben Matsui over here means, if you know for certain that the mate was buried there for the purpose of burial, then even if it's not a Beit HaKvarot, even if you don't find three, over there you're not allowed to disinter the mate, because he was Matsui. He was definitely placed there intentionally. If it's something that's hamotzei, you just found the mate there, you had no idea it was buried there, then you have a right to remove the mate from that location, and then you would need three in order to establish it as a Beit HaKvarot. The Balei Tosafot see that hamotzei prat hamatzui being different than the concept of something that is yadua mitchila versus something that's found later, which is a separate halacha there in the Gemara Nazir. They think that this is a different halacha, which is teaching you the fact that if he was buried intentionally there, that's what it means, matsui, then you can't move it. The reason that the Mishnah says hamotzei is because in that case, all of these dinim apply as to waiting to get three before you establish it as a Beit HaKvarot. Right now, matzah shlosha, he finds three of them. The way the Rashbam learns is that he finds three meitim in a parallel way, meaning that they're all buried next to each other, in a similar fashion. That leads to a significant problem in terms of what we've learned until now. The premise of the Gemara, something that was well accepted by all the Rishonim, the Rabbeinu Gershom even said it yesterday, that of course everybody accepts this or everybody knows this, that every cave or every burial slot was an amah wide, and between each burial slot was an amah. So now if you have three meitim that are laying out in that fashion, then each one of the three meitim is going to take up three amot for their cave. And then between them is two amot, one amah between each of them. That's a minimum of 5 amot. That runs you into a problem over here, which is the Mishnah says, Masah Shlosha, Im Yesh Binehem Arba Ad Shmoneh. If you have from 4 until 8 amot, there's no way you can have 3 meitim buried in a way that it ends up with 4 amot. It's a minimum of 5 amot to get a stretch of 3 meitim. So the Rashbam, who believes that they are buried in such a fashion that they are all exactly in the same direction, parallel to each other, then how does he get to 4 amot? So the Rashbam comes up with the Chiddush that the Braita has a different view as to what the distance between the meitim is. And the Braita believes that you only need 2 tefachim between each meit. Therefore, you can have a case where you have meitim that are strewn, 3 of them in a row. Those 3 encompass 3 amot. Between each of the meitim is 2 tefachim. That's 4 tefachim. And then you have a tefach on side of each meit. That gets you to 6 tefachim or another amah, or a total of 4 amot. So that's how the Rashbam does it. Based on that, he says, we're talking about a cave, or speaking about a cave that's 4 by 8. So this Mishnah, but basically has an opinion that the size of the me'arot do not accord with the size of the me'arot that we saw yesterday. We saw me'arot yesterday, according to the Chachamim, that are 4 by 6. We saw a me'ara of Rabbi Shimon that was 6 by 8. He suggests here that this is according to Rabbi Shimon, but the dimensions of the Mi'ara are 4 by 8. And that's why the Mishnah says over here, Mi'arba ad Shmoneh, that if the Meitim are laid out in such a way that they either take up 4 amot, or they take up 8 amot, then our suspicion is that you have a Beit HaKvarot, or you have a burial cave that is here. The reason being that it's either on the short end of the cave, the 4 amot means that the Meitim were buried along that short end, which is the 4 amot side. And again, the Rashbam explains that the 4 amot come from the fact that there's only 2 tefachim between each kuch, between each burial slot. Whereas if you find them spread out across 8 amot, then it's possible that they're on the long side of the cave, the 8 amot side of the cave. Now, as the Rashbam points out, they don't have to be all 3 of them equally distributed amongst that 8 amot. It just has to mean that they are stretched across the 8 amot. It could be that they buried 2, skipped 2 burial slots, and then buried the 3rd one. The other 2 were reserved for somebody else or for their family. So it doesn't have to be, when you have the 8 amot, it doesn't have to be that they're all equally distributed. It could be that you have 2, 1, 1, 1, and 1. They just have to be distributed along the 8 amot. So that's why, according to the Rashbam, when you find 3, our suspicion is that you're on one of the 2 walls of the cave. You're either on the short wall of the cave or the long wall of the cave. And if it's 8 amot, then obviously you're along the long wall of the cave. If it's 4 amot, then it's possible that you're on either the long wall or the short wall of the cave. And the reason that it's 4 and 8 amot has to do with this difference in view with regards to how many tefachim go between each grave. And then on the 8th side, you'd be able to fit 6 kuchin over there. Each kuch would be an amah wide. So that gives you 6 amot. Between each of the kuchim, you have 2 tefachim. So 5 times 2 is 10 tefachim. And then at each end, you have 1 tefach. So that gets you to 12 tefachim, which is another 2 amot. And that's how you get the 8 amot cave. So you have 4 by 8 according to the Rashbam. So that's how the Rashbam deals with our Mishnah. On the other hand, you can see here in the Balei HaTosafot, they bring from the Rabbeinu Tam, that they don't think that that's a proper explanation. Well, all of a sudden, did this Mishnah, or this Tana, change his mind with regards to how much you need between kuchin? Till now it was a given, that it was an amah. Now all of a sudden you're changing it to 2 tefachim? We never saw a machloka like that. We didn't really know of a machloka like that. Aside from the fact that maybe even from a practical standpoint, 2 tefachim is a very, very small wall between the kuchin, and you really have to worry about the integrity of the cave. So for that reason, the Rabbeinu Tam offers an alternate view as to how the 3 are distributed over here. That's what it says. So Mefarish Rabbeinu Tam, Dana Gimel Diktani Hocha, Shnai Mehem Mirocha VaMe'ara, Ve'echad Me'orech. 2 of them are along the width of the Me'ara, and 1 along the length of the Me'ara. Ve'en Yesh Ben Kuch Dekuch, Amah Kishir Demet Neitin. And therefore it has the same structure as our Mishnah, which is there's an Amah between each of them. V'dalet Amot, Tainu L'Shnayim Shibarochav. So then the 4 amot is for the 2 that are along the width of the cave. Bet amot v'ama bentayim. You have a 2 amot that are taken up by the meitim, plus an ama in between them. Hare gimel. V'ashlishim tza besof ama revid. And then the 4th ama is a half ama on each side of those 2 bodies. Hashkati shapir kishmatzan ritzufim mamash. We may seem kilanam velek elama ben kuch lukuch. So the Reino Tam keeps up what we had said until now, that the standard burial is an ama for the kuch and then an ama in between. The way he explains the three fitting into the four amot, it's really not three that are fitting into four amot, it's two that are fitting into four amot. I find two within four amot and then another one perpendicular to it. Or I find two within eight amot and then I find one perpendicular to it. Because then it could either be that it's on the short end or the long end of the cave. They're buried in a way that we see as normal, an ama, ama, and ama between them. And therefore we have suspicions that you're dealing with a Beit HaKfarot and Me'arot HaKivarot over here. They're not three in a row, like the Rashbam says, but rather there are two of them with one, what we call Yotzei Zanav, on a perpendicular basis to the other two. So you find two Meitim, and then perpendicular to that, you find a third mate. So our assumption is that they're at the corner of a cave. Maybe that you have a cave that has a short wall and a long wall. You're finding two of them on one side, and you're finding the other one positions perpendicular to them. We assume that he's on the other wall of the cave. And in that way, you can find them four amot, eight amot, because then they're not necessarily in a row where you're defining the wall of a cave and how far apart the burial slots are. You're talking about an area which in general would encompass what would be a cave. And therefore you don't need to get into all of this fancy footwork that the Rishbam does in terms of the distance between the caves, as well as the size of the caves, this 4x8, because it could be the distribution of where they are. We're just assuming that it is the size of a cave where if they're within 4x8 amot, makes it likely that the fact that it's perpendicular means they're part of the same burial plot or burial cave. So that's the first piece. The next thing is you need to do 20 amot of investigation. Now the 20 amot are very hard to come by to explain why you need 20 amot, and that'll be the first question of the Gemara. If you find the three kvarot and you're doing 20 amot, where does this 20 amot come from? The problem is that we have dimensions for Rabbi Shimon, we have dimensions for Rabbanan, and we can't seemingly make heads or tails as to why 20 amot is the number that you need to use. The way that the Rashbam says it, the whole thing is a chashash, just to start with. We're making you do this just out of chashash. So therefore, if you come and you find one, then we're not going to make you check 20 amot around, and we're just going to assume that it was buried there because nobody knew about a Beit HaKfarot here before. Nobody had known there was a maid buried there. So we assume when you find it, that it's an unusual circumstance. Once you've gotten circumstantial evidence that there's more than one buried there, then you start to run into a more serious issue, and that's why we make you look the 20 amot. But again, you're not under any obligation to look for the 20 amot. It's a chashash midrabanan. But I said, once you start to find this, we want you to do a bigger check or a better check because there's circumstantial evidence, and then you should be suspicious that there are other meitim around here. You just find one meit, we assume it's not a Beit HaKfarot, it wasn't known to be a cemetery, and then we would just disinter the meit because we assume that it wasn't buried there as a permanent solution to his death. The 20 amot, the way that we saw in the Mishnah, it's structured, you have a me'ara, a chatzer, and then a me'ara. So what we're trying to do is when we find the meitim, is investigate the entire side where you are to see if there's any me'ara there, through the chatzer in the middle, which is 6 amot, and then into the next me'ara that's on the other side. So we want to check that whole area to make sure that there are no meitim. Now you also don't know is which direction you're checking in, because you don't know if this is the me'ara on the eastern side or this is the me'ara on the western side. So you need to go in both directions, because you're uncertain as to whether it's facing this direction or facing the other direction. We'll see in a second that there might be some evidence of the fact that we would know which direction you need to look. Now for the Rashbam, it's easier to know which way you have to go because you have three meitim. If it's within four amot, then you don't know which way to go. Because four amot could be the short end of the cave or the long end of the cave. And therefore you don't know whether you should be going east-west, north-south, and you have to go in all four directions in order to figure out where these meitim are in the cave. I don't literally mean north-south, east-west. Saying that you have to follow the parallel line of the meitim, and you can go 20 amot in the same parallel line, 20 amot the other direction, and then you have to go 20 amot from their feet, 20 amot from their heads, because again, you don't know if they are on the long side of the cave or the short side of the cave. So then you don't know which way the cave is based on that, and therefore the Rashbam requires you to look in all four directions if it's 4 amot. If it's 8 amot, then you have a better sense of where it is, because if they're laid out across the 8 amot, then you're definitely on the long side of the cave. If you're on the long side of the cave, then you just need to go parallel with them. You have to go 20 amot in each direction. The other directions wouldn't matter because there's no reason that 8 amot would then, by their feet or their head, would go towards a cave. They're on the long side of the cave. So that's the way that the Rashbam. For the Rabbeinu Tam, it's actually a little harder. Because the Rabbeinu Tam has 2 and then 1 perpendicular. So you have a sense of where the cave is structured. You just have no idea, again, if it's on the long side or the short side. Because the 2 aren't 4 amot. So the 2 that are 4 amot could be the short side of the cave or the long side of the cave. The only thing that it helps you is that the perpendicular one should give you an indication of which direction the cave is in. And so therefore you have a sense of which direction you should be checking based on where that third mate is. But given that, the Gemara now asks, Amar Mar, Yarbat Shmoneh Mani, 4 until 8 Amot, who is the author of this Mishnah? Irabonon, if it's the Rabbonon that we saw before, Hai Amrei Dalet Amot Ashesh. They said the standard size of a cave, a burial cave, is 4 by 6. So where do the 8 Amot come from? I get the 4, but where do the 8 come from? Rabbi Shimon Amar Sheish Al Shmoneh. Rabbi Shimon said 6 by 8. So now I know where the 8 comes from, but I don't have any 4. So the Olam Rabbi Shimon he. It is Rabbi Shimon Vaitanahu the Tanya. But it follows this Tana because we have a Braita. Matz'an Ritzufim. You find them in a row. Ve'en Benehem Midal Ramot Ad Chet. And they don't have a space between them of 4 or 8. Yesh Lahem Tfusa. They have a status of tfusa, meaning that you take the earth and the decomposition along with them. Ve'en lahem shkunat kibarot. On the other hand, they do not get a status of a shkunat kibarot because they are too tightly buried. Because ein b'neihem midat amot ad chet. They don't have 4 to 8 amot between them, so they're buried in a way that is way too close, or way too dense for what we would assume to be a normal burial. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda omer mishum Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda says in the name of Rabbi Shimon, Stam Rabbi Shimon by Yochai, Ruim et ha'emtzayim ki ilo einam. We look at the meitim that are in the middle as if they don't belong there. Bashar mitztarfim. And the remainder now joined together to establish it as a Beit HaKvarot. So now, the Dalet Amot, Vadchet Amot, we're going to assume this is Rabbi Shimon, based on the layout or the normal layout of a burial cave that is mentioned in the Braita that we brought. The Braita we brought says that the normal way or spacing of burying of Meitim is from 4 to 8 amot. If it is more dense than that or further apart than that, then that's not a standard burial. That's not considered to be a Beit Kibarot. But now we said that that's Rabbi Shimon who we find in that Braita, that Rabbi Shimon believes that that could be classified as a burial cave, even if they're denser than that if you pull out the Meitim in the middle. But then you see that there is a standard of 4 by 8. And that is who is the author of our Mishnah that we just brought from Mo'alot. Doesn't match our Mishnah here in Baba Batra, which has Rabbanan at 4 by 6 and Rabbi Shimon at 6 by 8. But we have a Braita that has Rabbi Shimon with an opinion of 4 and 8. So that's fine. So now we solve that problem. The Gemara says, okay, now you think Rabbi Shimon's the author of our Mishnah that we brought from Mo'alot, then you're going to run into a different problem with Midalat Amot Vayad Chet B'mayu Kimto. So now you're going to assume that it is Ki Rabbi Shimon. Ema Seifa. What about the latter half of the Mishnah? Bodeke Menu Alan Esrim Ama. You have to measure from him 20 Amot. Mani. Who is the author of this position? I Rabbi Shimon. If you think of Rabbi Shimon, Esrim V'tartin Havin. It's 22 Amot. I Rabbonon Tamne Sari Havin. If it's Rabbonon, it is 18 Amot. So if you remember from yesterday, again, the Rabbonon believe you have caves that are 4 by 6. So now if you have a cave that's 4 by 6, so the long end of the cave is 6 amot. And then the chatzer, 6 amot. The cave on the other side, the long end, is 6 amot. So the only thing you would check is 18 amot. Because 18 amot would get you the span of a normal burial cave. So the chamim require only 18 amot of a span, and you would have figured out whether this is a Beit HaKvarot or a Me'arat HaKvarot on the other side. For Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah, we said that he thinks everything is 6 by 8. So if I do that, you have 8 amot for the Me'ara, 6 amot for the Chatzer, and then 8 amot for another Me'ara. That's 16 plus 6 is 22 amot. So nobody thinks that there's a 20 amot span between one end of a Me'ara to all the way the other end of the Me'ara. To get from one burial slot to the opposite burial slot, nobody thinks there's a span of 20 amot. So that's what the Gemara is asking over here. Now, the Gemara is saying, I Rabbanon. The Gemara doesn't even have a Havmin, it's the Rabbanon. They already explained that the Mishnah is clearly Rabbi Shimon. But just the Rav Chaim Milta, the Gemara is pointing out that we have nobody who could say this. So even if you wanted to say the Mishnah was a split position, which is the beginning of the Mishnah was Rabbi Shimon, and the latter part of the Mishnah is the Chachamim, you still are going to run into a problem because the Chachamim only require 18 amot, and Rabbi Shimon has 22 amot. So where does this 20 amot come from? Or why are you measuring 20 amot over here? The Rashbam actually points out that you would check 4 amot to the other direction, because if you believe the cave is 4 by 8, then you got to check to at least see if there's something on the other side, 4 amot on the other side. And then you have to do the 8 amot, which is the lengthways of the cave, to make sure that you're going on longwise. That way you'll be 22 amot to figure out if you hit something on the other side. So you're going to have to go, depending on the directions, you're going to have to go, let's call it 20 loosely, 22 amot. The other way you have to go 4 amot in each direction, because you got to make sure there are no caves on the other side of the actual cave you're in. Also have to make sure there's no other cave on the other side of the chatzer. So now the Gemara wants to understand, how do we solve this problem of where do these 20 amot come from? So now, as the Tosfot points out over here, you asked this question before, he's posing the question, that actually the way that the Meitim are buried, you would actually know which direction to look. It says, Umayri kishenimsa rosho letzad mi'ara, umargalotava fuchim letzad acheret. He finds that his head is towards the mi'ara, and his feet are towards the other side. So now there's suspicion that it might have come from a different me'ara. Why would you have to check in both directions? The Meitim were buried in a way in which their head was away from the cave and their feet were towards the cave side. If you do that, then you could just look at the way that the three are laid out and you would know which direction the cave is in. So what the Balei Tosafot say is it's a case where he comes into the cave, he finds three Meitim, but the three Meitim are facing the opposite way of what you would have expected. He says that the Margalotav hafuchim letzad acheret are facing outward instead of inwards towards the cave. So now there's circumstantial evidence they might be part of another cave that's on the other side. So now that's why you have to measure in both directions. Otherwise you would have just assumed you measure in the direction of their feet and then you would have figured out 20 amot. Then you don't have to measure from their head side because people don't bury like that. So what the Balei Tosafot says is that problem arose because you have the individuals who are there have their feet facing outwards from the cave. So now, instead, you have a cave where you are, so that already brings suspicion that that direction is the way of the caves. But they're buried in a way that makes them look like they're part of another cave system. So that's why you have to go 20 amot in both directions. One, because of the cave that you're in, where their heads are towards, and one where their feet are towards, which is the natural way to bury them, and then you have to figure out if there's a cave on the other side. That's why you have to go in multiple directions, even though we should have been able to figure out from the layout of the individuals which direction we are going in. And as I mentioned before, depending on the layout of the individuals, if they're found on the 8 amot spread side, then we know for sure they're on the length of the me'ara. And then you know that from their feet, you only have to check 4 amot in each direction. From the sides of the me'itim, then you have to go 20 amot. So in that instance, you wouldn't have to go 20 amot from their feet or their head direction, because you know already if they're laid out at 8 amot, they're on the long side of the cave. So on the long side of the cave, you need to just check for the opposite cave, which is 4 amot away. The width of the cave we said here is 4 amot. And 20 amot is from there to check where the other cave is. So therefore, if you could identify by the layout of the skeletal remains which way the cave would have been, that would limit the amount that you have to search or the directions that you would have to search. And of course, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, where they're laid out perpendicularly, then you would definitely know which direction you need to check in. Although you may not know, depending on how far away they are from each other, whether you're along the long ways or the short ways of the Me'ara, so then you would have to check at least in two directions, not in all four directions. So the Rashbam believes here that you have to check in all four directions, and that, again, might relate to whether it's 4 amot, where there's a likelihood it could be either on the Rochav or the Orech, and then using together with the Balei Tosafot, we're going to say, even though the shelet is facing the opposite way of what you would have expected, and therefore you have to check in both directions. So that gives you all four directions according to the Rashbam. So now the Gemara answers, how do we get to this 20 amot? Lo'olam Rabbonan hi. It is the Rabbonan. Ukhagon de badak balachsona. But it's a case where they checked along the alachson, along the hypotenuse. So midaha balachsona, ha nami balachsona. Well, if this one is on an angle, then so too the other one must be on an angle. Esrim v'tarte avyan. Then you're back to square one, you have 22 amot. Mar says, chada b'lachson amrinan, tre b'lachson lo amrinan. One on an angle we say, two on an angle we don't say. Alright, so now we're going to have to do some fancy footwork here. The first problem is that the math that the Rashbam does is clearly flawed. And the Balei HaTosafot already note that. And you can see in the picture in the Balei HaTosafot that they're proving the fact that the Rashbam is incorrect. But the Rashbam says, using the principle of Chazal, that any area that is one by one, then the hypotenuse that runs across is 1 2/5, or 1.4. So the Rashbam says, if you take an area that's 5 by 5, then you know that 5 times 1.4 gives you 7. So the hypotenuse of a 5 by 5 triangle, the hypotenuse would be 7 according to that number of Chazal. Says if you take a 6 by 6 area, then 6 times 1.4 gives you 8.4. And therefore the hypotenuse of a 6 by 6 space is 8.4. What the Rashbam says is, if you look at the base structure over here, then in a 5 by 5, 5 is the length of the sides. The hypotenuse adds on 2 amot, and that's why you get to 7. If you take a 6 by 6 area, then it comes to 8.4, which means that the base area is 6, and the hypotenuse adds on 2.4. And here's the quantum leap that the Rashbam makes, which is clearly flawed. He says that a 4 by 6 is the same as a 5 by 5. Why should there be any difference in the hypotenuse of a 5 by 5 triangle and a 4 by 6 triangle? He's saying if you take one amot from one side and give it to the other side, why should that matter? Given that, he says that you should take the base of 6, which is the longer leg over there, add 2 to it, and that'll give you the hypotenuse, which is 8. Because the 5 by 5 added on a hypotenuse of 2 amot, so the 4 by 6, you just add on 2 amot to that 6, and you end up with 8. If you do that, then when you go across the hypotenuse, you have 8. 6 amot is the chatzer, and then on the other side, you're going to do another 6 amot. The caves now are 4 by 6, because we're talking about the Rabbanan's opinion. The Rabbanan's opinion is that the caves are 4 by 6. So now, based on this flawed math of the Rashbam, the 4 by 6 cave gets a hypotenuse across the cave of 8 amot. So now, when you do 8 amot across there, 6 for the chatzer, 6 for the cave on the other side, that's 12 plus 8, that's 20. And that's where we got the 20. The Gemara says, wait a minute. If you take the alachson on this cave, you should do the alachson on the other cave. So that should be 8 plus 6 plus 8. And that's 22. The Gemara says, no, one alachson we say, two alachson we don't say. The way that the Rashbam reads it is that this is all a chashash. So in the first case, we're going to make you check on the angle just to see if there is anything on either side based on that angle. But once you've gotten off that first angle of the cave, we're just going to tell you check straight because the whole thing is just a chashash to start with. That's the way the Rashbam learns. Of course, there are a number of flaws in the logic of the Rashbam. The first and foremost, and the Balei HaTosafot already point this out, is that it's just not true. You can see the picture in the Balei HaTosafot. He shows you that an area that is 4 by 4, and then an area by 4 by 6, it's clear that the hypotenuse changes in those areas. And even though you have 2 amot extended, the hypotenuse does not extend that same amount of 2 amot, because a 4 by 4 space would only have a hypotenuse of 5.66, and a 4 by 6 space would have a hypotenuse of 7.2. So you see, there is not a 2 amot difference between that, even though there's 2 amot added. In addition to that, he says the square area you're dealing with is also not the same. 4 by 6 is 24 square amot. 5 by 5 is 25 square amot. So he says it's clear that the Rashbam's logic is completely flawed, and therefore, this cannot be the explanation over here, because you can't get a hypotenuse that equals 8 when you're dealing with a space that is 4 by 6. So therefore, the Balei HaTosafot reject that view. If you look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he has a way to do it, which is a little bit looser, and therefore avoids the technical problems of the Rashbam. She says, Kedama Rav Huna, Breda Rav Yeshua. This is a Gersa that's rejected by the Rashbam. Like Rav Huna, Breda Rav Yeshua, we saw yesterday, who said that you should set up the caves kecharuta, like a palm branch on angles. The Rashbam rejects the Gersa, and others do too, because that's not relevant to our case over here. The fact that it was like a palm branch yesterday on angles has nothing to do with measuring a cave on an angle. So the Gemara leaves that alone. But then he says, Balaksona de Mukila de Kuchin ki Haruta Balaksona. Vahanu Vava Mot Miatrot Balaksona Yudbet Chumshin. So these six amot have an additional 12/5 on the hypotenuse. To lo av yevav avav kim dalet avav. But wait a minute. The cave is not 6x6, which would give you, according to Chazal, 6x6 is 6 times 1.4. That would give you 8.4 hypotenuse. Dalet avav, ubahai ktsarot shel me'ara, v'chasrin hani bet chumshin. So that's why you would get 8x4 as the hypotenuse of on a 6x6 area. Ah, if you drop it down 4x6, you drop down 2/5 from it, he says. And when you drop down 2/5, that's how you get to 8. And then he says, "Umishum achilo medakte lehu becheshbon." So he says, they weren't so careful about the measurement. They got up to 8. Truth is, it's way off because the hypotenuse of a 4x6 area is 7.2. And so it's nowhere near even 8. So, but that's the way the Rabbeinu Gershom does it. It's like a loose math that he's doing. And that's how they get to the 8 number. On the other hand, you have to deal with what the Balei Tosafot and others suggest over here is what is the Reshbam's explanation is clearly problematic. And therefore, you have to come up with an alternate way to explain what the Alachson means in this case. Aside from the problem of the fact that we already established that the ratio of the Mishnah is Rabbi Shimon, and now we're establishing that the Chachamim are the authors of the latter half of the Mishnah, you also have to deal with this Alachson issue. So the way that the Rishonim deal with the Alachson issue is not to say that he's measuring on an Alachson, but rather, that's how he found it. He found the structure, the setup, along Alachson. He found it along a hypotenuse. So then when he goes to check the remainder of the amount, it wasn't that he is checking and doing it Alachson, but rather that's how it laid out. He already checked, but that's the way he started Alachson. How much more does he have to go once he's done that Alachson of Eight Amot? The answer is he has to do 6 and 6 to worry about the fact that there is a cave on the other side. Or the other way to say it is that even though the Alachson, the hypotenuse of a 4x6 area is only 7.2, we want you to go to 8 amot because we want you to touch both sides. We don't want you just to go through the middle of the cave. We want you to touch both sides of the cave to see if there are metim on both sides of the cave. So that's the explanation that the other Rishonim give. So the Rishbam says that in order to ensure that you get the kuchin, which we're trying to get around it, you do it on an angle. That way you're certain that you capture both sides of the me'ara. Others express it as that you're not certain as to whether you're on the long or wide side of the me'ara. So you do it on an angle in order to eliminate whichever of the possibilities over here. Or you started to measure in that way. It's not necessarily that you have to measure that way. That's the way the person might have measured, given that you don't know which direction to go in. And he went on an angle. For the remainder, you don't have to keep up that angle. You can just go the additional amount over here, which would be the 12 amot, to get to the full 20 amot. Whereas the Ramban, following that position of the Rabbeinu Tam that we saw before, that he found the Meitim, 2 on one side and then 1 on perpendicular to those 2, that's what the Shmona Amot are. That he found them 8 Amot on an angle away from the other 2. And that's evidence of the fact that there might be a Me'ara, that's 4x6. Again, even though 4x6 results in a hypotenuse of 7.2, nevertheless, it's something, as we saw in the Rabbeinu Gershom, who says that it's close to 8 Amot. So therefore, they just assumed that if he measured 8 Amot, and that's where he found the other mate, according to the Ramban, then you continue thereto forward with the additional 12 Amot, 6 Amot for the Chatzer, 6 Amot for the other Me'ara. And of course, we don't ask you to do it again on a diagonal, because we just, either it's the Kula, that we don't require the additional angle, or the fact that you found him this way, now you're trying to discover the cave along the lines of what you found. The angle originally is what gave you the 3 Meitim. But now that you continue on, you measure in a straight line, not on an angle. And so, according to the Rishbam, they only obligated you to do the first one on an angle, not the remainder on the angle. For the other positions that believe that you either measured like that originally, or that's how you find the structure, then there's no need to do that anymore, because the person's not going to make either a mistake in measuring on the angle twice, or the fact that now you've established what the dimensions or where the me'ara is, now you know where to go in a straight line, according to the Ramban, al piya Rabbeinu Tam. So now the Gemara says, Rav Shisha b'rei Ravidi amar, lo'olam Rabbi Shimoni. No, the author of the Mishnah, and this part of the Mishnah, is also Rabbi Shimon. V'alchamayiskinan b'niflei. We're speaking again here with miscarriages fetuses that were buried there who have smaller caves. And just like this side is Nifle, then why don't you say the other side is Nifle? And then, and you would only need 18 amot. Again, the Gemara answers, Chade b'nifle aminan, Tarte b'nifle lo aminan. We would worry about one set of smaller caves or smaller burial slots. We wouldn't worry about two. So the way that the Gemara is explaining it now over here is that the length or the structure of the Me'ara is now different. We assume, the Reisha, that the normal or standard is 4 by 8 amot. That's the standard cave that you're speaking about. Over here, we're talking about Nifle, which are fetuses or miscarriages. They have a smaller cave because they need smaller burial slots. And therefore, even according to Rabbi Shimon, the cave for Nifle is 4 by 6. So now what you have is, you have 4 by 6, and therefore the length of the cave is 6. The length of the chatzer is 6. The length of the cave on the other side is 6. That only gets you 18, because now it looks like the Rabbanans set up of the cave. So that's what the Gemara's question over here is. If you're going to say that these are the smaller caves for Nifle, that's 4 by 6, you're going to end up with 18 instead of 20. The Gemara's answer is, no. When you put together a cave structure like this, we would expect you to do 4 by 6 on one side, but 4 by 8 on the other side. One Mi'ara, one of the caves that surrounds the central chatzer, would be dedicated to miscarriages or fetuses, or be the smaller size kuchin burial slots. So that means now you have a 4 by 6 on one side, 6 by 6 chatzer in the middle, and then 4 by 8 on the other side. And that's how you get the 20 amot. You have the 6 amot of the shorter cave, 6 amot of the chatzer, and then 8 amot of the longer cave on the other side. And that's how you get the 20 amot. So that's the explanation according to the Rashbam. So then you run into a separate problem, which is now the ratio of the Mishnah says you have Meitim laid out by 4 by 8. So now that you have the Meitim laid out by 4 by 8, you have to measure 20 amot. Right? Those two are irreconcilable. The reason you only have to go 20 amot is because you're in a cave of 4 by 6. So how could the Meitim be spread out in a 4 to 8 manner like we said in the ratio of the Mishnah? So what you have to say, and this is what the Bali Tosafot say over here, but Tzarech Lamar, Da'avagav the ratio Ayre B'Gdolim, even though the ratio is talking about Gdolim, which is 4 and 8 amot, the Seifa is still completely separate from the ratio. It's not saying if you found them in this manner of 4 by 8, then you check 20 amot. It means that if you found Meitim, 3 Meitim, you check 20 amot, because we suspect that they might have been Nifle. If they're Nifle, the cave structure is smaller. That's why you have to check the 20 amot. And again, this is all a kula, because of the fact that it's all a chashash. It's a rechoshesh that it was Nifilim, and if it's Niflim, then we would just ask you to measure 20 amot out because of the way you found the structure of 4 by 6 amot. That's the way that the Rashbam explains it. So other Rishonim just say that it is a kula that is being expressed over here because the whole thing is just a chashash. That's what the Ramban suggests over here. That even though you found 3 Gdolim in the Me'ara, we're going to treat it as if it is a Me'ara of Nifilim, and therefore you would only measure for that Me'ara 6 Amot. So in essence, it's a Kula. And since it's a Kula, we allow 6 Amot there, 6 Amot for the Chatzer, 8 Amot for the other side. That is 20 Amot. The Gemara's question is, well, if you're going to be a Mekel over here, be Mekel over there. In essence, what the Gemara says is that we only hold of one Kula, not 2 kulot, and therefore you only get one cave of 6 amot. The cave on the opposite side will have to suspect is 8 amot, and that's why you have to check 20 amot. Or another way to express that is simply to say that we only require you to look for 20 amot. You're looking for the cave on the other side. So here you found Gidolim, so you're going to check for 8 amot in this Me'ara. Then we ask you to check for 6 amot of the Chatzer, and the other side will be Meko on you and just say, check 6 amot more of depth. In order to see if there's a Mara there, we'll assume it's a Marat Nifelim. In order to be Mekil on you in the total spread that you have to check, which is 20 Amot. The Ramban does bring an alternate Girsa from the Bein Uchananel, which explains this part of the Gemara according to the Chachamim, and not according to Rabbi Shimon. And there he says that the reason you have to check for 20 Amot, even though according to the Chachamim, the standard size of a Mi'ara is 6 Amot, then you have to check 6 for the Me'ara, 6 for the Chatzer, 6 for the Me'ara is 18 amot. How do you get up to 20 amot? The answer is nephilim. The problem or the suspicion that we have here is what we found with nephilim, and therefore they are shorter than the normal burial slot, or they don't reach the end of a normal burial slot. So we suspect that they don't fill out the whole burial slots, and therefore we add on another 2 amah to compensate for the fact that you're starting from nephilim and then moving outwards, rather than starting from the gidolim and moving outwards. So that's how you get to 20 amot instead of the 18 amot of the chachamim. But that all depends on a girsa of the Rabbeinu Hananel, that the continuation of the Gemara here is not in the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, but rather in the sheet of the Rabbonon. Now the Gemara continues and says, V'rami the Rabbonon ad the Rabbonon, Rami the Rabbi Shimon ad Rabbi Shimon. From that braita that we brought in, there's a bigger question about the globality of the statements of Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim. In that braita that we brought, he said if you have dense burial of Meitim, the Chachamim say that's not classified as a Beit HaGvarot, they're just too close together. That's indicative of a haphazard burial, because they're just buried in too close proximity to each other. Rabbi Shimon says no, maybe there were people buried in a standard manner, and the other ones were put in between temporarily, and then they were going to be taken out. So we look at it as if the ones in the middle are not there. So now, if you were to take that position and expand it to other areas of halacha, then you would expect them to be consistent of their opinions. For instance, we saw earlier in the Masechta about a kerem. You're talking about a vineyard. The standard distance between vines is 4 to 8 amot. There is an opinion of 8 to 16 amot. But in order to have a status of a kerem, of a vineyard, which would then have implications for planting other items near these vines or in between these vines, because they are a vineyard, you have a problem of kilea kerem, so you have to be planted in a normal manner that makes you into a kerem. So let's say that it's 4 to 8 amot, so that the vines have to be a minimum space away from each other to make them viable. If you have vines that are too close together, it doesn't have a status of a kerem because they are omed le'aker. They're there to be taken out. On the other hand, there's an opinion there that we look at the vines as if they're not there. You have 3 rows of vines that are very close together, each 2 amot away from each other. What we say is the middle row is as if it's not there. And we look at the 2 outer rows as being 4 amot, or the standard that they need to be away from each other, and it is a kerem. So if we were extrapolating from our braita over here, then we'd expect that Rabbi Shimon would be the one who has the opinion that we look at it as if the middle row of vines is not there. And we expect the Rabbanan to say that it doesn't matter, it's not a kerem because the middle row is there. The problem is, the Tanan, we have a Mishnah. A kerem anatua al pachot mi'arba amot. You have a kerem that the rows of the vines are less than 4 amot apart. Rabbi Shimon Omer ain't no kerem. Rabbi Shimon says it's not classified as a vineyard. Bachamim arim areze kerem. The Chachamim say, no, it is a vineyard. We look at the middle rows as if they're not there. Kasha the Rabbonon or the Rabbonon. Kasha the Rabbi Shimon or the Rabbi Shimon. Here you have a stira in seemingly what is their opinion or their global opinion over here as to whether you look at the middle items as if they're not there or do the middle items ruin the status of that which is there. Here by Beit HaKvarot, Rabbi Shimon says we look at the middle items as if they're not there. By the vineyard, he says it ruins the shame of a kerem. The Rabbanan over here say that we say that this is not a Beit HaKvarot, it's too dense. Yet there by the Kramim, they say, oh, we just look at the middle rows as if they're not there. So their opinions are reversed in the case of kerem. That's what the Gemara is asking. Rabbi Shimon, or Rabbi Shimon lo kasho. Rabbi Shimon's position is not a question or not a contradiction. Hatam lo nate inish. Adaita li aker. Hocha zimnin dimitramile benish mashot. By the case of the Kramim, people don't plant intentionally rows of a kerem so close together or in such tight density. It's not a viable way to plant vines. And therefore, if you find it like that, it's not called a kerem because this person is strange. This person isn't putting together a vineyard. This is not the way you put together a vineyard. The other hand, when it comes to the Meitim, it might have been that they were under time pressure. They were coming close to nightfall. Again, in their day, nightfall would have been no lights and been very hard to bury, or Benesh Mashot going into Shabbat. And they needed to get the Meitim buried before Shabbat. So since they were under pressure, they put them down in a very dense manner, even though they didn't intend for them to stay. They had intended to come back and disinter them, or they intended to come back and have someone else remove them. Whatever happened that they didn't come back, they could have been it was wartime and they were killed. Could have been that they don't have access to that area. For whatever reason, they didn't get back to moving the Meitim. But you could understand or could come up with a plausible circumstance in which the Meitim were put there quickly and that they were meant to be taken out later. And therefore, Rabbi Shimon says, that's the way we look at it. We look at it as if the middle Meitim are not there, and this is a Beit HaKvarot, and the additional people were put there because they were going to be taken away later. On the other hand, the Rabbanan Amikosha, could also say if the Rabbanan that their statements or their position is not a contradiction. Hocha Kaven Diminavel Lo Mikre Kever. Over here, since it is unbecoming, it's not called a kever. The way that the Rabbeinu Gershom reads, it's a lack of kvod ha-meit to put the meitim in such close proximity that nobody would make a beit ha-kvarot this way. Even temporarily, they wouldn't put the meitim in such a manner because it's a total lack of kvod ha-meit, and therefore it's not something that you would expect to be there. If you find that, it's obviously not a beit ha-kvarot because that is an unacceptable way to put it together. You can see the Rashbam had a slightly different pirsa, which is a daita litlo. People don't put it down with the intent of removing it. Like Zohar lifnoto misham. People don't bury with the intent of disinterring. People bury, they bury permanently. People don't put people in there in a Beit HaKavod and say, oh, I'll come back later, unless they were under pressure and they had to bury them there. But that means that the whole group is buried there in a haphazard or a non-intentional manner. And it's not that it was a Beit HaKvarot with people being stuck in between. So that's just not the case by the Rabbanon. But by the case of the vineyard, it's Hata Meimamar, Hei Minayu De Shapir Shapir De Lo Shapir Lavi Letzive. Over there by the vineyard, you can say he plants the three rows in tight density. He wants to see the quality of the vines or the production. And he said, the one that's good, I'll keep. The one that's not good, I'll use for firewood. Meaning that there's an alternate purpose, an alternate reason for planting the vines. I can use it for wood. Or I can check and see which one is better, and then I'll determine. I'll leave the one that's better, I'll keep. The other one, I'll pull out. So people have an intention of being okay or undermining it. So what you see from here is that their opinions are not global in nature, which is Rabbi Shimon always views things when they're too dense as if they're not there. And the Chamim say, no, if it's too dense, it's not the proper qualified status. It's not what their opinions are about. Their opinions are about the particular case. The reason in that particular case. Is it normal to bury people in this way? Is it normal to plant in this way? And Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim have differing opinions about that, and that leads to their difference in opinion in these two situations. All right, with that we end the perek. Kadr nalach mocher peirot. Now we begin the next perek. Amomer lechaveiro beit kur afar ani mocher lecha. The person who says to his friend, I'm selling you a beit kur of afar. The question of why you need the word afar, according to the Rashbam, it's essential to have the word afar in here, because if you don't have the word afar, then the type of property that you're giving does not have to be ra'oi l'zri'ah whatsoever. It doesn't have to be plantable. It could be bedrock across the whole thing. People buy pieces of property to build on, to do other things on. If he doesn't specify the word afar, then you would get a beit kur. You just have to give him that area. He doesn't have to have any qualifications as to what the type of property is that you're giving. So that's what the Rashbam says over here. The word afar adds on that additional aspect. And you can see that in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he says, "Lahachi nakat afar davar ha-ra'oi l'zera." That's what the word afar comes to teach you, that it's a place that is fertile, that is plantable, and that can be used for vegetation. The Ramban says that you don't need the word afar, and the word afar over here doesn't add anything, because a standard beit kur is used for planting. And so by definition, the word beit kur already means afar. And the language is just extraneous, but doesn't tell you anything over here. Now then, the Balei Tosafot say that the Beit Kur Afar is a chiddush over here, that even though you said Beit Kur Afar, they're going to see in the Mishnah that you're allowed to give them areas that are slightly depressed or slightly higher, even though technically they aren't Beit Kur Afar. Nevertheless, we give you the right to give them to you. So that's the chiddush over here. Chiddush that despite the fact that the person said Afar, you're still allowed to give him some of these areas that don't exactly qualify to be Afar. Obviously, we're not talking about a specific Beit Kur Afar, because then you would have used the word Zeh, and then the person would have no recourse, because Zeh means that you get what it is, and you know what it is. You get exactly what this area is. So obviously we're talking about a Beit Kur Afar means a swath of property that's part of a larger tract of land that he owns, and he's selling him off. Now he has to give him a cutout of a Beit Kur Afar. The question is, where or what does he have to give him in terms of the Beit Kur Afar that's there? Alright, so Beit Kur Afar, ani mocher lecha. The size of a Beit Kur Afar, we already know from the Mishkan. The Mishkan is Beit Satayim, and it's 100 by 50. So 5,000 square amot is the area of tusa'ah or a beit satayim. We also know the relationship of a sa'ah to a kur is 30 times. So if you have tusa'ah equals 5,000 square amot, that means that if you multiply that by 15, you'll get the area that is a square amot of a beit kur afar. 15 times 5,000 is 75,000 square amot. And then if you take the square root of that, you get 273.86. So that's what you're looking at. You look at a property, a square property of 273.86 by 273.86. If you look and they'll go to Bach over here in Ot Bet, he brings you that calculation. There's in parentheses, they have that calculation in the Rishbam. And over here, there's the Girsa is fixed by the Agota Bach in Ot Bet, where he says, Behubiribua, the Beit Kur Afar, and a square version is, Resh Ayin Dalet Amot, 274 Amot, Chaser Tefach, less a Tefach, take out a Tefach from it. Remember, there are six Tefachim in an Amma, so you take out one Tefach, so 274 minus one Tefach is 274 minus a six, or in essence, 273 and 5/6 Amot. Then he says, Chaser Mashu, and then you have to take out another Mashu, and he says, that Mashu is Pachot mi-chatzi rochav etzba, it's less than half a finger's width, v'yeter ashlish, but more than one-third of a finger's width. So if you do the math that the Agota Bach does over here, you'll see, first of all, you have the 274 minus the sixth. 274 minus the sixth is 273 and 5/6, or in essence, it's 273.833. We said before that the square root of 75,000 was 273.86. He's coming up with 273.833. That's why he says you need another mashu. Another mashu you need is 0.03. You need to add on 0.03 to get to the right number, and that's what he's saying. That mashu, he's describing as being less than half an etzba, but more than a third of an etzba. An etzba is four etzbaot in a tefach, six tefachim in an amah. So an etzba is 1/24 of an amah, because you have the four fingers without the thumb, and that gets you the tefach, and then six tefachim that make up the amah. So it's etzba is 1/24. If you multiply that 1/24 by a half, you get 1/48. Or if you multiply it by 1/3, you get 1/64. Or in essence, what he's saying is that that mashu that you need to add on to the 273 and 5/6 is somewhere between 1/48 and 1/72. And if you do the math there, that means it's between, it is greater than 0.014, but less than 0.021. So he doesn't get exactly to the 0.03 that you need to make up the difference in the mashu. But again, it's somewhere close to what is being described over here as being 273.833, which is the square area that will give you the length and width of that square is that amount, then you end up with 75,000 square amot or a beit kur afar. So now, if he sells on beit kufar mayno chelecha, hayusham nikaim amukim asarat tfachim. If there are depressions or crevices that are more than 10 tfachim deep, Oslaim gvoim yutfachim, or there is bedrock, little mountains of bedrock that are more than 10 tfachim high, einan nimdadim ima. They are not counted along with the property, meaning that they can't be counted towards a beit kur afar because they are not on the plane of whatever is there. First of all, they're not plowable, they're not fertile, you can't use them. But beyond the fact that even if they were fertile land, they're too high or too low that you can't work them in one shot because of the depth or the height of them. The Rashbam points out over here that they have to be at least a minimum, he writes here, arba al arba, which seems to me to be clearly be a ta'ut sofrim, because arba arba will be 4x4 amot to give it significance like by Shabbat. The truth is, by Shabbat, you don't need 4x4 amot, you need 4x4 tfachim. So it's likely that he meant arba'ah by arba'ah, meaning that not only have to be 10 tfachim deep or high, they have to at least have an area that's 4x4 tfachim to be significant enough that it would be considered to be left out. The way the Rashbam believes is that ein nimdamdim ima means elanotein lo beit kur shalem mikarka chalak tekeven damukim gvan asara, because they are too high or too low. And so therefore, in that case, the mocher keeps that property, And he has to give him alternate property that makes up the Beit Kur Afar. The other way to look at it is that he still gets that property, the buyer. It just doesn't count towards the Beit Kur Afar. Now you have to give him more property. So he keeps the Nikayim and Slayim because they're in the midst of this property. But you have to now give him additional property to make it up to get him to be Beit Kur Afar. So the other Amah and the Rambam believe that you get these pieces of property, those Slayim and Nikayim, you get to keep them along with the sale. You just have to get a full Beit Kur Afar. So not only do you get a Beit Kur Afar, these become like bonuses as part of the sale or add-ons as part of the sale, but they don't count towards the Beit Kur Afar that you're entitled to. The Raivad has a middle approach, which is you have to keep these Nikayim Mitzlayim because there's no way that the other person can access them from outside the property if you're giving you the property, but you buy them at some sort of discounted price or appropriate price that is obviously not for a Beit Kur Afar, but you purchase them at some low price in order to include them in the sale. So now that's the first piece of the Mishnah. V'ima Marlo, on the other hand, if he says, Ke Beit Kur Afar, he uses the Kaf HaDimyon in expressing what he wants. He says, like a Beit Kur Afar. So in that case, Afilo Ayushem Nikayim Amukim Yoter Masarat Tfachim, Oslayim Gvayim Yoter Masarat Tfachim, then in that instance, if he has areas that are greater than 10 tefachim deep or 10 tefachim high, they're counted along with it. That's what the Kaf HaDimyon helps him with. Kaf HaDimyon says that you have a Beit Kur Afar, but kit, similar to a Beit Kur Afar. I'm not giving you exactly a Beit Kur Afar. I'm giving you something similar to Beit Kur Afar, and therefore I'm giving you areas that include these depressions or these elevations in the property that are a little above or below what is the normal plane of the property. We'll call it the normal contours of the face of the earth or the face of the field. Despite that fact, they are accounted here because of the Kaf HaDimyon. So according to the Rashbam, the word afar helps to get you that it has to be fertile property. It has to be property that can be planted and used for Zriah. The Beit Kur then makes it that it has to be property that is usable as planted property. Ken Beit Kur Afar allows you this additional room to give him the Nikayim and the Slayim. Obviously, there's still Beit Kur Afar over here, so you can't just give him bedrock or you can't give him unplantable space. But within that area that is mostly plantable, if it has these depressions or elevations, that won't ruin the consideration or classification of this area as being a Ke Beit Kur Afar. So that's the difference between the Seifa and the Resha of the Mishnah. Again, for others where the word Afar is not necessary, like the Ramban, then the Beit Kur versus Ke Beit Kur is the focus of the Mishnah as to whether you said Beit Kur or if you said like a Beit Kur. And for the Balei Tosafot, the Chiddush of the Mishnah is, of course, you can't give him these deep areas. So Beit Kur Afar, the word Afar comes to teach you, despite the fact that you said Afar, if the areas are less than 10 tefachim, they go with it. Because that's considered or classified as Beit Kur Afar, even though that's not Afar. Over there, those areas, because they're depressions or elevations. And then if you say Ke Beit Kur Afar, then of course the Ke allows you the opportunity to give him even things that are 10 tefachim deep or 10 tefachim high. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mara at the bottom of Kuf Bet Amud Bet.